godless sodomites. For 15 years on a daily basis, Westboro Baptist Church has warned you on the mean streets of 500 American cities and all 50 states. I will mock when your fear cometh. When your fear cometh as desolation, and your destruction cometh as a whirlwind. When distress and anguish cometh upon you, then shall they call upon me, but I will not answer. They shall seek me early, but they shall not find me. For that they hated knowledge and did not choose the fear of the Lord. America, land of the sodomite damned. Amen.
Oh my goodness. Hi everybody, how are you doing? It's the Rebecca Juro Show. Oh, and of course that was our good buddy Fred Phelps, who passed away today. Of course, Fred, as you may know, was not the best friend of the community, or was our community's best friend, depending on who you ask, honestly. Because here's the thing. Fred, obviously a purveyor of hate, spent decades spewing anti-gay rhetoric, certainly wasn't somebody who allied himself with the community, and yet, at the same time, he was so horrific, so over the top, so hateful, that even the people who generally opposed gay marriage, they were generally conservative, they were generally anti-gay, even those folks said, whoa, wait, hang on a second. You know, it's interesting, because in a way, I think Fred, really, he helped people understand what hate really looks like, what anti-LGBT hate really looks like. Not what it looks like when it's been filtered through the mouth of a politician or a journalist or an activist, but really what hate really looks like. The one thing about Fred, I'll give him credit for, was he was blatantly, bone-crushingly honest about his views. He didn't hide anything. He didn't try and couch it in more acceptable terms. He put it out there. Okay? So you could at least, you know, you don't have to like him. You don't think he's a horrible person. I would agree with all of that. But I've got to respect his willingness to lay it all out there and say, this is what I'm about. This is who I am. Take it or leave it. You can't help but respect something like that. Especially when you do what I do. So I give him a little bit of respect, at least on that. At least he was willing to say, this is what I believe, this is what I own up to, take it or leave it. You know, love me or hate me, this is who I am. So in that way, I guess I could give Fred a little bit of respect. But, you know, I got to tell you, this guy was so hateful and so ridiculous and so over the top that he became a caricature of himself. Seriously. Okay, I want to tell a story. This goes back to, I guess it was 2005 or 2006. Now, as many of you know, there is a station that's around today. It's called Sirius OutQ. It is Sirius Satellite Radio's gay or LGBT, depending on who you ask, station. Now, of course, you could call it LGBT, but in reality, Sirius OutQ has never had a transgender person on as a host, well, as a paid host in their entire history. In fact, I could tell you the one trans person who was actually a team member at Sirius for a week. Yeah, hi there, that was me. 2006. Six shows, goodbye. Okay, they had Diana Cage, who was wonderful, covered lesbians, covered trans, covered gender variants. Well, you know, they had to put a stop to that, so she lasted about 8 months. But in any case, this isn't about Sirius OutQ. Back in 2005-2006, this was the early days of Sirius OutQ. It was right after they created this. And at the time, the guy who created Sirius OutQ from scratch, the guy who put together the team, the guy who hired everybody, people like Michelangelo Signorelli and Larry Flick and all these guys, it was a guy whose name was John McMullen. Now, John McMullen was the program director. He was hired as the program director, which, of course, is like the head of the channel. Okay, he's the guy who decides what goes on the air, who's going to be hosting, those kind of things. Okay, so that was his job. And he had his own show, which I was a loyal listener of at the time. I used to call into his show all the time. And he would do something on the air that I've never heard done before or since. I thought it was so inventive. What he used to do was he used to call Fred Phelps on the phone, on the air, and engage him in conversation. And he would call and say, "Hi, Brother Fred, this is Brother John," and blah, blah. You know, he would engage Fred in conversation. Fred would come to the phone, they would have this exchange, and Fred, again, was very blatant, very blunt, very willing to discuss his views, but he presented them as, this is what it is. You know, so again, like I said, I don't give him any credit in terms of what he was advocating, but I can at least give him a little bit of credit for being honest and being forthright about where he was at. But John McMullen, okay, this guy had a way of questioning Fred on the air that made him look like an even bigger idiot than you would think. Okay, now, first of all, bear in mind, the part of the humor here, of course, was this was Sirius IQ that he was doing a show on. This was an LGBT audience. So that's who was tuned in listening to this. And John, of course, was well aware of who his audience was. And he would do this with that in mind. In fact, I even helped him one time by calling in while Fred was on the air. And I don't remember exactly what I said word for word, but I'm going to try and recreate it for you now. Basically, what I said was, I called it the show. I said, and they were calling him, we were dressed down because we called him Reverend Phelps at one point. And he said, no, I'm Pastor Phelps. So this was during this appearance, and I called in. I said, Pastor Phelps, I am a transsexual woman. And, you know, I hear you talk about gay people all the time, but I don't hear you address transsexuals. And I was wondering if you had an opinion on transsexual people. He says, and I'm going to try and do the voice as best I can. Now, granted, I'm doing an imitation here, so forgive me, but I'm going to try and do this as best I can. He said, "Well, Becky, you know you're going to hell, right?" "Really?" "Oh, yeah, absolutely. Those transsexuals, you're going to hell. You're going to hell, Becky. I want you to know that." And then John cut the, because we got the chuckle that we were looking for. So John said, "I said, see you later." And we chatted with each other on Instant Messenger afterwards, because this had all been set up. John and I had set this up in advance. I had contacted him on Instant Messenger and told him I was going to call in. And so, you know, that's what it was John was able to artfully make this man make himself look like an idiot. And I thought he was so skillful about the way he did it. And so that was my first encounter, and my only real encounter with Fred Phelps, when he actually did, in fact, as I've said on Facebook a number of times, he condemned me to hell on satellite radio. And, you know, and I personally, I wear that as a badge of honor. I mean, Fred Phelps thought I was going to hell. I must be doing something right, you know. So I always felt that was a badge of honor for me. What's even more interesting, though, about Westboro Baptist Church. Now, this was not necessarily Fred himself, but you know, the organization. They would do things like they would say they were going to show up for an event and then just not show. One time, here in New Jersey, in my hometown, the local high school was doing performing the Laramie Project, which, of course, as you may know, is the story of Matthew Shepard, the murder of Matthew Shepard, and the events that took place after his murder. And the Westboro Baptist Church had announced that they were going to picket the performance. Well, I mean, this school's... less than a quarter mile from my house. So you know I had to show up for this thing, right? So get in the car, drive down to the high school. And I get there, and there's the cops are very, you know, these are, you have to understand, this is a local town. Everybody knows everybody. Well, not everybody, but enough people know each other. You know, people know who we are and things like that. The entire side, they had, what the cops had was the way that this school is set up is this big building, and then there's a road that comes from the highway that goes directly to the center, and then you turn right to go into the parking lot, or you can turn left and go into like a loading area for trucks and stuff to deliver things. So what they have is they have these two patches of lawn on either side of the road where it tees with the front of the school. And on the left side was where they had an area set aside for the Westboro Baptist Church. And on the right side was where they had an area set up for all the LGBT people and supporters who were going to be there to be a counter protest. Well, when I got there, the LGBT side was packed to the point where people, the cops actually had to expand our area because there wasn't enough room to fit everybody in there. Whereas the Phelps people, you look over the other side, there wasn't a single person there. And we were like, are they coming? We don't know. And then, I don't know, it was about a half hour after I got there, I look across and I see this one guy going over. He looks and he looks like he's got some kind of equipment with him. I'm not sure exactly what it was. I couldn't tell. But he's got something slung over his back. He goes over to the area where the Westboro Baptist Church is supposed to set up their protest. Looks around, looks over at us, and walks away. And that was it. That was the last we saw. They never actually showed up to protest, which I thought was interesting. Okay, so, you know, I mean, Fred, you know, he's like a cartoon character at this point. I think everybody, even the right, even the evangelicals, stopped taking him seriously years ago. Because don't forget, he founded the Westboro Baptist Church in 1955. This has been around. You know, I mean, this isn't something new. This has been around. So, it's just funny. He's a cartoon character. Nobody was taking this guy seriously. And so it's hard for me to take him seriously.
Kelly is trying to send me messages on Facebook, but I can't respond right now because I'm talking to you on the air.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, it looks like, she's telling me something actually important.
Oh.
Hey, Mr. Mike?
Yeah.
It looks like our live 365 server is full.
And I am trying to work out a secret private feed for our listeners and participators in the show tonight. So give me a minute on that. I'm looking for an IP address I can send them. Hang on.
Okay. All right.
So
if you heard that, please, if there's somebody who's trying to log in that you know of, please pass that on to them. Mr. Mike is trying to set that up, and we, of course, will let you know as soon as we have that. I'll try and throw something up on Twitter. I know there's a lot of people who want to listen. Please be aware also that we will try to get the podcast of this show up as quickly as possible after the show, because I know there's a lot of people who want to listen. And I'm going to tell Kelly right now, Mike is trying to set up a free alternate. Give him a view. Okay, so that I just sent out to Kelly Busey, who I'm sure has friends now. I know there are a lot of you folks, who want to listen live. And unfortunately, we did have to switch over to Live 365, unfortunately. We had Live 365 many years ago, and then we switched to a private provider, another provider who recently closed. Now we're back with Live 365, and it's probably not our first choice, but it's what we have for now. So, and Kelly is informing me that she just got the show online, so that's good.
Fantastic.
Okay. So keep trying. Please keep trying. And please, you know, if there's somebody, one of your friends who wants to listen to, please let them know that we're trying to get as many people as possible in to listen to the show. Also, I will remind people that while we are not taking calls before, we will take calls after Kelly's interview. I don't know if she's going to stay on with us after the interview and take questions, but we will take calls. And, of course, there are two ways for you to call into the show. The first one is by telephone, of course, and you can call us at 928-277-4921. Bear in mind, we can only take one phone call at a time. So if the line is busy, that means somebody else is on. Please give it some time. You can also get in touch with us on Skype. Put Q1 Studio, all lowercase, into your Skype. You can contact us that way. So if you have something to say, you want to contribute to the show, absolutely do it. Try the phone. If you can't get through on the phone, try Skype. You can also email me at rjuroshow@gmail.com. And in fact, I'm going to throw up because it's one of those special, special nights that we need the extra coverage. I am going to put up my AOL Instant Messenger, and you can get me there at RLJ5862. So we got AIM, we got email. You can even get in touch with me on Twitter, although actually that's probably not a good idea because it's difficult for me to keep watching Twitter while I'm doing the show. So the best ways for you to get in touch are phone, Skype, email. Okay? Again, anything you got a question? Needless to say, I'm going to be talking to Kelly in just a few minutes. We will have her on in our second block in the 7:30 hour from 7:30 going on till around 8 o'clock or so. And so you can tune in then. And hopefully we will get some good conversation going. I have to admit, I'm a little confused about this. I'll go into a little bit more detail when we have Kelly on, but I'll talk a little bit before we go to break, because we have a few minutes before we go to break. So I do want to lay out my perception. Okay, now, before I go any further, I should say, full disclosure, I was on the host committee this year for the LGBT media convening. Now, what that means is that I was one of the people who was charged with making this thing work as far as the programming goes. I got lucky for me. I got a lot of help from some really specially talented people like Matt Foreman and others to make me look good because, frankly, I was assigned something that I don't generally cover, which was immigration. It's not a topic I generally cover on this show. It's not a topic I generally write about. So I was a little out of my element. And fortunately, I had some very well-educated and extremely competent people to help me out. And we had a good time. I did an introduction. And, you know, I spent most of that day. I mean, I was paying attention. I was watching what was going on. But I was spent most of the day in the back of the room. Because, first of all, as a member of the host committee, I didn't feel like it was appropriate for me to take up time of these guests, which was limited, with questions. I felt that, as a member of the host committee, I should step back and let the other folks do that. So I did not do that. You know, I got my moment. I did my 2-minute introduction, and that's it. And I basically enjoyed the presentations, and I quietly watched from the back. Now, Kelly was in the front of the room and off to the side. So it was difficult for me because she was literally catty corner across the room from me. Like, I was in the lower left corner. She was in the upper right corner. So it was difficult for me to see what was going on her end of the room. You know, and frankly, I just wasn't looking for it. I mean, I wasn't expecting to see that sort of thing, you know, discrimination. I wasn't looking for it. I really wasn't. I mean, I'll admit that completely and fully. I just wasn't looking for it. I didn't expect it. So, you know, I'm very confused about this. And so I'm going to ask Kelly about that because, you know, it seems odd to me that we are both trans women and yet we had such different perceptions of the same event. And so I'm really interested in talking to Kelly about this and seeing where you know, how this it came about. And you know, I am never saying, not for one minute, that her concerns are not valid, that she doesn't have a right to feel discriminated. I'm not at all saying that, because I don't know. I did not witness it, but that doesn't mean it didn't happen. Yes, I admit to a little bit of bias, because I know the people who are running this thing, and I don't see, let's put it this way. If there was any discrimination, I have a very, 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 very hard time believing it was intentional. I think what might have been, and this is my suspicion, this is not a fact, this is strictly my own personal suspicion here, that she might have been been called on, not because she's trans, but because she didn't necessarily represent one of the bigger media organizations, or was a person who happened to be in the moderator's line of sight, because, again, she was off to the side. And I also want to point out, and the rest of this I'll save for, because we're going to break in about 2 minutes, but I will make one more point before we go to break. That morning, okay, now I should tell you, Saturday morning, okay, this was Saturday morning when this happened. Saturday during the day was when the panels are, when Kelly says she was discriminated. But that morning, several of us went to the White House for a tour. I don't remember if Kelly was with us or not. She can tell us when she gets here. I don't remember. I mean, it was a lot of people. I don't remember everybody who was on the list. But anyway, so we went on this tour, and we got back a little bit later than expected. So breakfast took a little longer than expected. So everything got pushed back a few minutes, which meant, well, where are you going to cut? Well, you can't cut the presentations, so you got to cut the question and answers. And we had stuff that was, you know, scheduled. You know, it's like whether or not you like it or not, you know, the next presentation is scheduled at this time. You know, you have to get the stuff done. The room is rented for X amount of hours. You know, you have to cut the time somewhere. So in a lot of cases, the time that was cut was from the Q&A sessions. That's how we saved a few minutes. That's how, because Bill Browning, publisher of the Bellerica Project, who's the guy who's really in charge, his concern, and it was, of course, the right thing to be concerned about at the time, was, you know, let's keep things on schedule. Let's move things along. Let's, you know, that, so, yes, was there enough time for Q&A? No, probably not. But it wasn't because we didn't want to do Q&A. It was because we were running late. So I just wanted to throw that out there before we go to break. And that is exactly what we are going to do right now. We have got somebody who I just hopefully connected with on Facebook again today, Jenny Slater, Modern Day Menglers. We'll catch you in about five, gang.
the spring. I bring you some little goodies from the park.
You won.
There's something evolving. Feel the pain, feel the joy, and sidestep the little bits of history repeating.
All right, we are back. It's the Rebecca Giro Show. Thanks for sticking around. And we have on the line, Kelly Busey from Planet Transgender. Kelly, are you there?
Yes, I am, Rebecca. How are you?
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you so much for coming on. Now, I want to start. First of all, I want to tell people that you run Planet Transgender, which is a very well-read transgender blog. And you joined us at the LGBT media convening in Washington, D.C. a couple of weeks ago. And basically what this is we should tell people what we're talking about. It's an event that where LGBT bloggers and journalists and, I guess you could say activists, but mainly it's people who are making media in the LGBT community get together. We talk about issues. We network. And this is a yearly event. I've gone for the last 2 years. I know, Kelly, you've gone for at least the last 2 years. And this year I was asked to be on the host committee. Which, as I explained before we went to break, is basically I was responsible for helping to make sure that a certain part of the program was together and writing an introduction and that sort of thing. But you wrote a post that I when I first read this, I have to tell you, I was like, I didn't see this. This is not the event I was at. I want you to talk about your perception of what happened and why you felt discriminated against.
Certainly. First, I'd like to say I listened to your lead-in before the break, and everything you said I have no problem with, and I agree. It was an excellent event. I was really overjoyed to be invited. The panels, the actual panel presentations were wonderful. The themes were, you couldn't have asked for better themes, more timely themes. I think that possibly they could have been a little bit more focused on actual issues rather than more generalized like they were. But then, of course, like you say, there was limited time. Really enjoyed that, and it was a little bit different from last year's, but in some good ways. As far as perceptions, now I've talked to Bill about this.
Bill Brown, who is the publisher of the Hilarico Project and the guy who runs the convening. I just wanted to throw that out there.
Essentially, my mentor, for this event, the inclusion in my mentor for the inclusion in LGBT media, the gay part of LGBT media. I'm pretty well known in the trans end of it, but most gay bloggers or journalists have never read Planet Transgender. The only reason why this got any press at all or any attention at all was because I posted it on the TA, Trans Advocate, which is pretty much unavoidable then when it gets on there. We get 40, 50,000 hits per article, sometimes more. But anyways, like I explained to Bill, we talked about this at length. It was my perception, and I understand it was my perception, and wasn't something other people were looking for. Of course not. It wasn't something that other people would have been aware of. But then that's part of being a journalist, is when you have that opportunity to talk about those things on a media source that people will
right, but you, but Kelly, you said specifically that you felt that you were discriminated against, that you were passed over for asking questions.
Oh,
and,
yes.
And so, talk about that a little bit, because I really want to hear your take on you know, how you felt that not only that you weren't asked to ask a question, but also that where did you draw the trans connection? I have trouble with that. I really do. I mean, okay. I won't talk about what was said privately among the host committee, but I can tell you that these were all very trans supportive people. And it was a concern as we planned this thing to make sure that trans people were welcome and included. And I'm having trouble understanding the connection.
Okay.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Well, here's where the connection is. All of this talk, the conversation was framed, quote unquote, real talk, and it was mentioned a number of times as a build up for actual conversation that you could, and this would lead one to believe that you could express yourself. The convening was designed to express oneself without fear of repercussion, because real talk means sometimes saying things that other people don't agree with. Now here's where radical comes into. Who's the radical that we want to include? Is it a Al-Qaeda member? No. Who's the radical? Is it a black person? Possibly. Is it a white person? Possibly. The radical is somebody that's different than. And the person that is different than, is from different from majority of people is transgender people.
We are
radically different. So when you cut to the chase from all of the, the panel conversations, basically they were talking, and the conversations inevitably led to transgender inclusion in this and in that, and it was a great conversation. So basically, cutting to the chase, you could insert trans with radical as far as the board goes. Or genderqueer.
Okay, I understand that, and I can appreciate that.
That's where the connection with trans goes.
But where does that come in terms of when you were trying to ask a question? Do you think that you were specifically passed over because you were trans?
No, I never said that.
Well, I'm having trouble.
My reaction to it was anger, was a feeling of despondence, of course. And in my experience, majority of that in my history has been associated with being trans. In the article, I related it back to how I felt when Barney Frank split Henda, and excuse my language, and I don't know if you have censors, beepers.
No, you can say anything you want.
Yeah, I felt like a fucking tranny. And I said that in the article, and people that know me have known that I've railed against that word ever since TikTok with Knives came along. But in any case, I'll tell you the specifics, and I'm going to name names, and I'm going to name the things
sure,
that happened.
Sure, do. Yes, do. Please.
This is specifically why I felt like I wasn't given a chance to say anything for whatever reason it was. Mm-hmm. When Matt Foreman was calling out for people to raise their hands for input, I raised my hand right away, and okay, he looked at me and then looked away. And there were some other hands raised behind me, and he called on a number of other people. And when those conversations ended, he asked for some more comment, and I raised my hand again. Now, I know this is not going to earn me any friends, but from what I saw from Matt Foreman, he grimaced when he saw me raise my hand, and he had to look into the room and wait for somebody else to raise their hand while I was sitting there with my hand up. There was a pause for a couple moments while nobody else was had their hand raised, and I'm sitting there with my hand raised. And on the TA post, he had said that we had made eye contact twice. I really only knew of once, but at that point, I felt that it was just a matter of happenstance, that it was okay. You know what? Something I could overlook. Somebody actually came up to me and said, "Why didn't Matt call you on you?" Said, "You were the only one with your hand raised, and you had to wait for somebody else to raise their hand." And I said, "Yes, I know. You know, it's okay, because the convening had just begun. It was something that occurred, and I can overlook it. I mean, I can let it pass. Mm-hmm. This is really important to me to be here. So that was the first of the events.
Mm-hmm.
Now the second panel, was Radical Methods of Greater Diversity in Queer Journalism. And that was run by, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that the moderator identifies as trans or trans diverse of some way. I'm not even exactly sure. He actually called on me, when I wrote the article, I didn't remember that, but we had a email conversation, and I said, you know what? You did call on me because when we did that table, you know, we did the conversations at the table and we talked about what had been presented at the board. Nobody else at the table raised their hand. So I raised my hand and I did say something at that point. He did call on me from the table. You know, I mean, I've definitely appreciated the fact that, that I had that opportunity to speak. Although what I said was laughed at by certain members in the room, because I have the audacity to write about other minorities, they seem to have a private joke about that. And I know who they are, and I know why they did, but I also know the reason that happened put egg on the face of the person that had suggested that I was wrong about doing it in the first place. Now, this was a year or so ago, but that kind of excavated my discomfort at that point. Because I will write about, I will go places that other, now I'm going to say this, other Caucasians won't go. I will go there. Mm-hmm. I have reasons why I know I can go there. I haven't shared all those experiences, but I have shared the lives personally, with many, many people of other racial background. So I have experienced a lot. Moving on, if you want to, I can tell you briefly about the last experience. That was really what kicked it. And I'm going to try to say her name, and I might not say it right. Sarah Lazuski.
Okay.
I
think that's correct. I'm not sure.
Okay, and I apologize if it's not. I really do. Sarah, I apologize if I said your name wrong. I've invited all of the other moderators to participate in the call-in and anybody else, you know, if they, you know, because I'm sure
did. And, in fact, yeah. I also sent them a quick note that told them how to call in. As long as I'm talking now, I actually want to ask you, there is a good possibility that some of these folks may call in. I asked them to call in after we were done with the interview. So if you want to stick around on Skype and possibly answer some of the questions, that would be good. Because what we'll do is we'll talk until the break, and then we'll go to a break, and then we'll come back and maybe do a little Q&A if you want to stick around for that.
That could be interesting.
Okay. No promises. I know there's a couple people who expressed interest in calling in, and we'll see what happens. I can't make any promises because you never know on this show who's going to call in or what.
Yeah.
But yeah, I getting back to this, one of the things talk about your final with Sarah, because I was watching from the back of the room again. I was in the back of the room. You were opposite me, catty corner, on the right side of the room. I was in the back on the left. And so I wasn't able to see up close. I mean, I just saw, you know, basically her running around pointing at people. You know, that's all that I got from the back of the room.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah. You really, like you say, you know, there was this total different space. We were in different spaces at the time. Well, when she started asking for our comments, I hadn't intended on saying anything about, Dallas Buyers Club at the time. Mm-hmm. I wrote about it, I said that was my reason for going. Not necessarily. I mean, I would have liked to have personal, you know, interactions with other bloggers if I could have. You know, that was more my intent rather than speaking about it like I did. But it was something that was so ingrained, you know, so had been bothering me so much that I did say something about it. I used that opportunity to say something about it.
Okay.
She wouldn't look in my direction. She looked and she looked and then looked off a number of times, and basically totally ignored the fact that my hand was up. Now I know that they were in a rush for time at that point. It was the last panel of the day, mm-hmm. but once again, there was periods of times when there was not another hand up, and mm-hmm. it just seemed to me like I was being purposely ignored. And as a transgender person, when you are sitting in a room full of LGB journalists that basically own the room as far as exposure, as far as people have, you know, their audience, you feel like if you don't use that moment to speak, you're going to forever lose it, which I would have done. This would have never come to the surface if I hadn't said, I've got something to say. I have something to say. Yeah. And Dallas Transgender the Dallas Buyers Club came out.
Right. And I have to ask you, I mean, I this is one of the things that has been really most puzzling to me. And it's probably the most concerning aspect of this of all. Because I know how important the inclusion and trans acceptance was when we were planning this thing. And my question to you, Kelly, is you knew I was on the host committee. You knew Bill was there. You knew Matt. Why didn't you come to one of us and say, hey, you know, I'm having a problem here. Why did you come? I mean, I don't know what I could have done, but I certainly would have gone to Bill or to Matt or other folks and said, hey, you know, what's going on here? But you waited until after it was over, everybody was home, and then you published your piece, which took everybody, including me, by surprise. So I'm wondering, what was your thinking in terms of not coming to one of us at the event and saying, hey, I'm having an issue here?
There really wasn't an opportunity. I mean, after that last, it didn't come to a head until Sarah's panel, because basically her voice was extremely condescending. I'm going to say that right up front. This is my opinion, and one that I still have right now. The way that she talked to me, she talked down to me. She talked down her nose to me. Now, she came over to my table, and the first thing she wanted to point out to me, as if she had a reason to be there, she said, you have nobody else to talk to. And I'm like, what? You know, like, I don't know that, you know? Mm-hmm. She was dripping with sarcasm, with condensation. And she was so condescending. I almost didn't accept her invitation to talk at that point. I really didn't have anything to say, but I did talk with her because basically I would hate to have felt like I was being ignored, and I didn't want to ignore anybody else, you know, especially intentionally. Now, as far as, like I say, those were my perceptions. And I'm one person in the room. But here's the thing. I'm going to write about it. I'm going to write about it. And now, this is another perception that I have. Since I wrote about it, all those likes that I used to get on Facebook when I used to comment on certain key individuals that organized for this event, I didn't get those anymore.
Well, you know, I think you shocked a lot of people, quite honestly.
Well, I think there's a lot more than being shocked. I think that when a transgender person speaks their mind and it's not something that LGB people want to hear, especially if it's something that goes against the grain, then you aren't just not liked, you're ostracized.
Oh, absolutely. In a lot of cases. And I will say that I have absolutely experienced that myself at some level. But not from these people. You know, I mean, yes, absolutely. Have I been marginalized and discriminated and demeaned for being trans in groups where, you know, I mean, I'm sure you've tried to get like paid work as a writer in LGBT media. So you probably have some of the same kind of experiences along those lines that I've had with people not taking you seriously, because it's like, well, you know, why are we gonna hire trans people to write when we already have gay men, you know, kind of thing. So I absolutely sympathize with you on the feeling of that and on the perception of that. But it's these particular people that I have an issue with, because I can tell you from personal experience, from personal interaction with these people, that nobody was looking to exclude or in any way demean trans folks. I
came on the show to offer my viewpoint. I didn't come on the show to argue with you about this.
I understand, but I heard
what you said before about that. And I respect that opinion, but to me, that's what that is. It's an opinion.
Okay, so, yes, it is. Absolutely. So I'm basing an opinion. I have had personal interaction with these folks.
That's about the end of that conversation with me right now. If there's something else you would like to talk about, I'd be more than happy to.
I just want to bring out both sides of this issue, because there was clearly a perception when you released that article. I know, because I interacted with these folks, that it took everybody by surprise.
Absolutely, it took people by surprise. There's a brotherhood that doesn't get that if you talk about the brotherhood or sisterhood or however you want to put it, you're going to suffer the consequences. You're going to suffer the consequences. Now, I'm going to go back just a very short while ago. When there was a certain movie that came out, I tried to get conversations going with at least half a dozen other gay bloggers, about how problematic this was for their people, and I tried to talk to them about what the fallout of this is going to be for them as gay people. For the people that have AIDS, HIV in their own community, in an article. And basically I was told by one of the largest internet publishers that if I wrote a real, and I'm going to quote, real article, that they might pay attention to it. Okay. This is so wrong. This is so wrong. The real truth is that if you speak to gay people about things that they don't want to know about, things that don't fit that their demographic that they write to aren't going to like, they're not going to listen to you.
Yeah. Oh, that is absolutely certainly, I have experienced that as well. And I, you know, again, I am not trying to argue with you or in any way say that what your perception is wrong, because it's your perception. But at the same time, I'm also curious and questioning, because so many other people had a very different perception. And, you know, I'm not seeing a lot of folks now coming, you know, to say that they agreed with your perception. What I would like to do now, Kelly, is I believe we have somebody on the line. So I'm going to, if it's okay with you, I'm going to bring some people on, and we're going to do a little Q&A. Now, I should point out that we are almost due for a break.
You know, let me interrupt you right now. That last segment that you just did, I think I'm going to sign off here, because I'm not going to feel like I'm being ganged up on.
Well, that's
you,
not the intention.
Your perception.
Come on, you know,
no.
We've had these conversations, Kelly. You know that's not what I'm doing here.
No, I'm not going to do that. So I do appreciate this time to talk. I think that bringing this to the forefront of you know, people's minds is a good thing. But you are presenting this in a certain way that I don't have an equal footing with. But I do appreciate this opportunity. Thank you very much.
All right, then. I wish you would stick around, because I would love to get some interaction going. And come on. I mean, you've known me a long time, Kelly. You know that that's not what I'm about. That's not what this show is about. I think you can appreciate that.
All right. Let's see if Aaron is on the line.
Okay. Well, all right. So that was Kelly Busey. I do wish she would have stayed on. Yeah, we had at least one guest who, called her a chicken, but I understand her frustration. But before we get into a little bit more, I know we have at least one caller waiting on the line. We're going to ask her to hang on because we have a break. And when we come back from our break in about 5 minutes, we will start with our first caller, who is a member of the host committee, who will be joining us on the air right then. So we will. What do we got up there, Mr. Mike, for musical interlude?
Okay, Becky, let's have a little bit shorter break since we're asking Aaron.
Yes, absolutely. So we have Aaron on the line, so we're going to take a short break.
Aaron, if you're hearing us now, stick on the line with us, please, and let me find something that's good to play here. How about some Natalie Britton?
That sounds good, because your host needs to visit the ladies' room.
Becky, I was just explaining to Aaron that you have about 20 cups of coffee before you go on the air, and these breaks are absolutely mandatory. So,
yes, and it causes me to misgender people occasionally, which I apologize for. Aaron, are you on the line?
Yeah, I'm here. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Oh, you bet. So you heard the interview. Now, we should point out to folks that you were also on the host committee. I would love to hear your perspective. Did you think Kelly had a point?
Sure. So yeah, I became aware of Kelly's concerns when she posted the piece on the Trans Advocate, and actually sent a personal response after that, kind of to address some of those concerns. Because certainly as a human being, but also as a journalist, hearing that someone feels censored is always going to be upsetting and disappointing, and definitely don't want anyone to feel that way, especially at an event that's supposed to be inclusive and really striving to be radical in that way. So definitely wanted to address that. And of course, as you mentioned as well, everyone has a right to feel how they feel about things, and certainly wouldn't want to argue with anyone's personal perceptions. However, like you were saying, I probably saw things a little differently than it sounds like Kelly did. Just kind of to put it out there, I am also trans-identified and a member of that host committee for the first time this year. It was my second convening. I attended for the first time in 2013. Even if I didn't necessarily, agree with everything that Kelly had to say, it was still, good to hear that perspective because you want to know how people are experiencing an event and kind of what their feelings are about how it plays out. I think my sense, from being kind of up there in the moderator position, trying to facilitate those conversations, is that probably had a little more to do with just kind of the way these things play out, the difficulties in, calling on so many people. There were probably 70 people in the room trying to get a diverse group of participants to call on, to respond, to really balance that out. It can be stressful up there too. A lot of us were sleep deprived, trying to make all that happen. But still, I think, her concerns raised some important points that gave me food for thought. So, I definitely appreciated her bringing that up. One thing for me, I know I've never really moderated a panel. I've participated in panels in other ways. But I think, there's a lot of power and privilege that happens in a room like that, that it's, important to be aware of. So, I was making an effort to, kind of be mindful about who I was calling on and try to kind of spread that love around the room. But, at a certain point, the conversation kind of took on a mind of its own and people just started talking in the room, without being called on necessarily. And, I don't want to make judgments, but, you can kind of see who feels empowered to speak out of turn,
Yeah, and, that brings up another point that somebody made to me privately, who I'm not going to say who said this because I feel that would be inappropriate. It was a comment that was made to me privately. But one person felt that there might have been more of an attention paid to folks who were more well-known and with the bigger names, with the bigger media outlets, the people who everybody knew, that there was a tendency to let those folks be sure to ask a question, and folks from lesser known media such as Planet Transgender weren't as actively included. Did you perceive that?
You know, I probably wasn't as attentive to that as I could be, because I know when I wasn't up there actively moderating, I was kind of live tweeting like crazy, just trying to take it all in. So probably wasn't, you know, kind of monitoring how that played out, you know, like I could be. I mean, I suppose it's possible. People are, you know, I think human nature, you're probably going to respond to people that you feel more familiar with. I certainly don't think there would be an active effort to, you know, call on people that seem to be, you know, quote unquote, bigger names or anything like that. And of course, I can't speak for how other people moderated their panels. I did just try to, you know, keep an eye out for someone that maybe hadn't spoken much, or, you know, kind of spread it out in terms of, you know, different, you know, people from different parts of the community to try and get different perspectives. But of course, you know, didn't do a perfect job of that. And there was a point where people just started talking and I didn't really, you know, kind of rein that back in probably as quickly as I could have. So I think there's, you know, certainly lessons to be learned in just the basics of how we moderate and how, you know, power and privilege plays out in that room among the participants and who feels empowered to kind of speak whenever they'd like to. And then the other thing that I think I got out of what Kelly was sharing in the piece that she wrote was that maybe there could be more opportunities for the attendees to speak to one another and to kind of really dialogue about how we choose to cover different topics. You know, like the Dallas Buyers Club, you know, didn't necessarily fit neatly into any of the panel topics, but certainly, yeah. You know, that was on her mind. And I think a lot of people would have been happy to discuss that, but there wasn't really a space for that, I guess.
Yeah, I think that was maybe if anything, if there's any criticism I could level, is that maybe that there wasn't enough space for those kind of conversations to take place, because everything was so regimented and so tightly scheduled, especially because we lost time at the beginning of the day, that I think maybe a little bit of that freedom was sacrificed for the sake of keeping on schedule. You think that's fair?
Yeah, I think it's challenging because the panel topics we were trying to cover, I mean, they're very broad. You could have a full day just talking about any one of those topics, and, you know, the convening could easily be a week, you know, if we all had that kind of time to come in and really get together and talk about the issues. So, you know, in my mind, it was really the panels were to serve to kind of start a conversation. So on some level, you know, even though I may not agree with everything Kelly had to say, you know, I may have experienced things differently, I'm glad that we are continuing the conversation, because in my mind, that's what the convening should do, is it should be a start, and then we should keep talking about the issues that are brought up, because we certainly can't address all these issues to a point of conclusion, you know, in a day's time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you so much, Erin, for calling in and giving your perspective, because I think this is so important to have a variety of voices. Because obviously, yeah. This is something where perception is everything, really, I guess. All right. Absolutely. Thanks, and have a great night.
Thanks, you too.
Okay. All right. And that was Erin Rook, who is also one of the members of the host committee of the LGBT Media Convening. Anybody else who wants to call in? I've given you the number. It is, what is it? I always have this thing written down in front of me, and whenever I need it, I never have it.
Jump
it's
right in.
928-277-4921.
Okay, that's it.
Give us a call. You can also get in touch with us. You can call Q1 Studio on Skype. You can also get through to us there. Mm-hmm. You know, I have to tell you, I think Erin made some good points. I think Kelly made some good points. I'm disappointed in Kelly a little bit that she wasn't willing to, that she bailed out so quickly, that she apparently felt, or at least it seemed to me, that she felt I was kind of...
Kelly and invited her to jump back in and explain to her that we're not ganging up on her. We would love to hear back from her.
That is the very last thing I want to do. Okay, because again, I have experienced this elsewhere. I mean, I am a trans writer who has tried to get professional work. Okay, you ought to know being demeaned and, you know, not heard because trans. Oh, well, believe me, I can totally relate, and I can totally understand why somebody like Kelly is sensitive to that. Okay, I have experienced it myself. I would venture to say most trans people, particularly trans women, have experienced some form of this in one form or another over the course of their post-transition or pre, during, whatever, their transgender, transsexual lives. I don't fault her in any way for feeling the way she does, but I did want to take a little bit more time to explore the roots of that and to say, well, was it something that the moderators did, or alternatively, was it something that was just done? In other words, like I was talking about with Aaron, is it that, you know, maybe folks who were the moderators just pointed at the folks that they knew? Not because they were excluding, but because, oh, yeah, okay, that guy, I know him, he wants to ask a question, let me ask him. You know, because you tend to favor friends. And if you don't know somebody, you don't really have an idea of what they're going to ask. So sometimes people may be a little cautious. Okay, now, is that the reason? I don't know. I can't say. I don't know what was running through the minds of the folks who were moderating these things at the time they were doing it. So I can't go and say, I know what Matt Foreman was thinking, or I know what Sarah Blazewski was thinking, or Aaron, or anybody else. All I can say is that I didn't see it. But, you know, again, I wasn't looking for it, and I was in the back of the room. I wasn't really paying attention looking for that. But I'm having trouble because, you know, like I said, I was in the room. I know how this thing was planned. I know the people. I got to know the folks who were involved with this. You know,
Can I jump in for a second?
Yes.
You know,
yes,
I go to conferences. It's been a little while since I've been to one, but there are in-groups and out-groups and little cliques that develop. And we talked about this a couple of weeks ago or a week ago. And I was wondering, you know, if you're there and you're kind of part of that out-group, your perceptions are slightly different about the situation than if you're in with the fast crowd there. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever gone to a conference like that and felt totally excluded from the proceedings? And
I wouldn't say a conference because I haven't gone to many of these conferences,
right.
But I certainly have in like my working life in you know, trying to apply for example, for media work in particular, as I mentioned earlier, I have found that there is a very strong, most of the LGBT media is created and run by gay men.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, there are some exceptions. For example, Diane Anderson Minshall, who runs The Advocate, and there's, you know, others. But most of this media is run and written and created by white gay men.
So those are the in kids right there.
Yeah, and those are the in kids. And if you're a trans woman, they just don't take you seriously.
True.
Okay, I've just the same way I had problems when I was trying to get radio work because people see you're trans. When they say you're gay, oh, you can do anything because you're gay, so who cares? When you're trans, well, they don't see that you can do anything else other than that which is related to trans. So, yes, I have experienced that. But I have never had it that specific. Usually people are – when I have experienced it, it's been more subtle. It hasn't been, go away, you stupid tranny. It's been, we're covered. Don't worry about us. We're good. We don't need you right now. And then you see them hire three more white gay men. You know, that kind of thing. Okay? It's not that they have a problem with you. It's not that they're discriminating. It's not that they have an issue with trans folks. They're just not interested. It's not important to them. They want to talk about the issues that are important to them,
mm-hmm,
as white, rich white gay men.
Mm-hmm.
So that's who they hire. They hire other white gay men. Same principle here. I'm saying, and I'm not saying that this is exactly the same, but I would think that some folks are going to choose to allow people to ask questions who they know, because they know these folks, are going to ask good questions. Because what you don't want to do, and I'm saying this as a host and an interviewer who's had some experience with this, okay, the last thing that you want to do is ask somebody a question or have them ask a question and then get a bad response or an off-topic response or something that drags down the event, you know, and if mm-hmm. you're not sure, okay? Because some people can ask their question in two sentences.
But you can't.
Other people are going to take four paragraphs.
Wait a minute. You can't tell by looking at the person that you're going to get a great response or not.
But you can tell if you know the person and you say, well, this guy's a great writer and he asks great questions, so I'll go with him. Do you know what I'm saying?
I do.
And bearing in mind that you're standing in front of a crowd of 70 people and you've got about 10 seconds to pick your next question. You don't have time to sit there and do an analysis. You're going, that's... seriously. That's especially because there was time issues and you see Bill in the back of the room rotating his wrists around each other, making a wrap it up sign and, putting his finger across his throat saying, okay, cut it off. You don't have a choice. You've got, it's like doing radio. We have 2 hours to get this show done. When the show is over, the show is over. That means I get as much time as I have to get everything in there. And if it's done and I'm not finished, well, too bad. I did what I could. Show's over. Boom. Same thing here. You're on a schedule. You've got X amount of minutes to cover this topic, X amount of minutes to cover that topic, X amount of minutes to do this, X amount of minutes for lunch, X amount of minutes for breakfast. And you have to be able to schedule all that stuff because you know what? At the end of the day, when your rental of the room that you're in is over, it's over. It's over. And that means you have to leave. And people are going to get up because people have other things scheduled. There's things scheduled in the evening. People have plans to go out, blah, blah, blah. Unfortunately, what has to often be sacrificed is the Q&A because you don't want to cut the content. You don't want to cut the presentation. So what are you going to cut? You're going to cut the optional part. You're going to cut the question and answer session. And so when you're under that kind of pressure and Bill makes a sign that says you got two questions, you're just going to go the first person. And that doesn't necessarily mean that there's discrimination there. What it may mean is that people aren't thinking hard enough about being diverse, which is something Aaron alluded to. I think we have to be careful, okay? Because again, I think Kelly is absolutely, she has every right to feel the way that she does. My concern was I wished that she had come to me or she had gone to Bill or to Matt Foreman, or to Aaron, or to any one of us who was running this thing, and said, hey, I got a problem. I'm feeling discriminated. Because you know what? I don't know. Because, of course, now it's over, and the situation is gone. I don't know what I could have done for her. But I certainly could have tried. I certainly could have gone to Bill, or Matt Foreman, or Aaron, or Sarah Blazewski, or whoever, and said, hey, I would have done that. Of course I would have. I don't want anybody to feel excluded and discriminated against. And I know that Bill and Matt and Aaron and all these folks feel the same way. I mean, I know these people now, I've worked with them. So it's hard for me to make assumptions like that about folks like that. I'm sure people remember a few years ago on the Bolerico project, when Bill came under fire, we had this post from this guy, Ron Gold, who was a founding member of the task force. And it was a really transphobic, awful post. Okay. And frankly, as I and others said at the time, like Bill made a key mistake in letting it run. But Bill was called all kinds of terrible things, horrible, transphobic and all this shit. and the reality was he was not transphobic. What he was, he made an editorial decision that he thought was going to help spur conversation and tweak things and get the conversation going, and it backfired horribly. Okay, and you know what? It, in large part, that was his fault. Okay, but the reality was, yes, he made a bad decision, but it wasn't a transphobic decision. It was a bad editorial decision, and that's different. I'm thinking that this is the same kind of thing. That Sarah Bluzewski or Matt Foreman or whoever was moderating at the time wasn't being transphobic. They were being, they weren't thinking it through. They didn't say, gee, you know, I haven't called on any trans people. They weren't thinking in those terms. They just called on the people who they were comfortable with, who they were familiar with, who they happened to see raising their hands with 10 seconds to choose somebody, and they just didn't look in Kelly's direction. Now, do I know that? Of course not. Okay, I have no way of knowing that for sure, because I can't read these people's minds. I don't know what was going on. But I don't see a transphobic connection. I just don't. And I understand that Kelly felt that we were trying to attack her. That I was trying. I feel disappointed that she feels that I would do that to her. Because, I mean, anybody who listens to this show knows that we don't do that. I mean, the people I go after, and I do go after people, of course, but they deserve it. I mean, when I go after the Human Rights Campaign, which I haven't done lately, I'm sure you've been paying attention, I have not called them out in a while. Why? Because they haven't done anything that's worthy of being called out for. Okay, but when I do call them out, there's a good reason behind it. Same thing here. I am not somebody who's going to hesitate to call out anybody when I think they're right. But you know what? I'm not going to stake my reputation and plant my flag on an issue where I can't say in my heart that I agree, because I didn't see it. I did not experience what Kelly experienced. And so I can't say, okay, Kelly, if you say so, therefore it must be true. Because, you know, I turn around and I say, these are people who I've worked with. These are people who I've known for years in some cases. Okay. And I don't see what she is. And you know, I don't see that. I just don't. You know, I mean, to give you another example, Matt Foreman, who came under fire many, this is going back when he was head of the Empire State Pride Agenda, which is New York's LGBT rights organization. And he was the head of that organization when, frankly, one of the most horribly transphobic political experiences in the history of this movement ever occurred, when transgender people were literally physically excluded from discussions over the Sexual Orientation Non-Discrimination Act. Okay, I felt that was horribly, horribly transphobic. But you know what? Here's the thing. Matt Foreman owned up to that a couple of years later, in 2004. And he said, you know what? I screwed up. I made a mistake. I was wrong. He apologized. And you know what? He didn't do it again. And he learned from the experience. You know what? That's the kind of person who I can say, all right, well, you know what? I didn't like it. And yeah, we're still digging out from that. I mean, don't forget, New York still has no civil rights for transgender people anywhere outside of a handful of larger jurisdictions. So the damage done by that event is still harming the lives of transgender people. But I can also say, you know what? Here's a guy who, he did something that was wrong, that was not right. And then he said, you know what? It wasn't right. I screwed up. I apologize. And I'm not going to do it anymore. I mean, what more do you want? What more do you want? I mean, you know, and the truth is here's a guy, and as far as I can see, he has made good on that promise a dozen more times over. Okay, and you know what? If we don't allow for the fact that people can make mistakes, learn from those mistakes, and become better people as a result of those experiences, then what the hell are we doing here? I mean, isn't that what activism is all about? Education, saying, you know what? You were wrong. Here's why you're wrong. And yeah, encourage them to be right. I mean, isn't that what activism is really all about? And if we don't allow for a positive outcome of saying, you know, sometimes this works, that there are people we can reach, and there are people we can connect with, and there are people who we can change their hearts and minds and get them on our side. If we don't believe that, then what the hell are we doing here? Oh, my goodness. All right. Well, Mr. Mike is reminding me, because I've gone way, way over, that we are due for another break. We have got, this is from the Transfusion CD, Joshua Bastian Cole, and I'll Be Different. See you in about 5, Dave.
I'm the voice of spring. I bring you some little goodies from the forest.
You won.
Hello.
Oh, hello. Oh, my goodness. Did I totally blow the cue?
That's all right.
You never gave me one. Okay, it's not my fault.
It didn't go through. Here, let me try that again. See, your cue.
Yeah, well, there's the cue that I didn't see.
It's perfect.
Didn't appear on my thing. I'm sitting there, I'm listening to the music, I'm waiting.
Yeah, it keeps repeating.
And I'm just, like, sitting here waiting, and, like, you know, and like, oh, then all of a sudden the music stops. I'm like, hello.
This show incredibly smooth today.
Oh, my goodness. Well, all right. Well, welcome back, everybody. It is the Rebecca Juro Show. Oh, my goodness. Well, anyway, I do want to invite people once again. I would love you to call in. Did you listen to Kelly? Let's see. I got a thank you note from Aaron, who I would say she was wonderful. He was wonderful. Oh, my God. I'm going to, like, pound my head into a wall now. He was wonderful. And I hope that you will call in. What did you think of what Kelly Busey had to say? 928-277-4921. You can also email me at rjuroshow@gmail.com. I will, if you send me something, I will read it on the air. So, I've said pretty much what I'm comfortable saying. I mean, if you want to get into it, you know, the last thing I'll say on this, before we get into it, we actually have some other news to cover, believe it or not. But before we get to that, I will say the one thing is, that I just want to make this point one more time. That I did not see I just didn't see it. Oh, wait a minute. Let's see here. We have a couple of posts on Facebook here. Let me just see what these are before we move on. Okay, well, here. Okay, this is from Kelly Busey, who just posted this on Facebook. I'm going to read it. I have not read this before. This just posted like 9 minutes ago while I was on break. Was going to stay on the Rebecca Juro Show during the call-in portion, but after Rebecca stated for the umpteenth time how trans inclusive the panelists are and how she couldn't imagine any of them could have ignored me, I started to get concerned. Then the real kicker was right as people started calling and she said something to the effect of, I don't see anyone siding with you. I'm not going to stay on the line and get lambasted. I think that's really disappointing that she felt that that's what I was setting her up for. I shouldn't have accepted her invitation to talk because it wasn't talk she was after. It was vindication of the hosting committee's anger that I should write something she and they didn't agree with. Could have been a positive thing. Missed opportunity, Juro. Well, you know what, Kelly? I'm sorry, but frankly, I'm going to be blunt here. As you know, most of you guys know, I want to do. That's bullshit. That's bullshit. Okay? You know I asked you good questions. You gave good answers. Yes, I pushed you for more information. And yes, I did express my viewpoint that the people on that host community were not transphobic. Okay? Now, that's my opinion. I could say that. I worked with these people for months, helping to set this up. I connected with them. We exchanged email. Okay? Yes, do I know them all intensely personally? No. There's a couple I do. Bill Browning, for example. I've known Bill for, God, it's going to be close to, what, 8 years now? Something like that? I mean, you know, this is Bill is somebody I know very, very well. Okay? You know what? I'm sorry, Kelly, but this is my show. I get to express my opinion, too. Your opinion is not the only one. I had you on because I wanted your perception. I wanted your opinion. I wanted to know how you saw that. Okay? But I'm going to get myself into trouble here, but I don't give a shit. You know, I'm so sick and tired of this fucking victim mentality that some of these folks have, where it's always about them, it's always that they're being discriminated against, it's always about how it's all about them. And you know what? Sometimes it isn't. Sometimes shit just happens. Sometimes you're running late and people get dissed inadvertently because you're short on time. Sometimes it's just chance. Sometimes, you know what? The person wasn't looking in your direction. Sometimes it just happens, and it doesn't necessarily mean it was because you're trans. Okay, we had trans people on the panels, we had trans people in the audience, we had trans people on the host committee, we had trans people throughout every aspect of this event. And you know what? I mean, I wanted Kelly on this show because I felt that her perspective was important. And I didn't want to take on this issue without having her perspective presented. That's why I invited her on the show. That's why I asked her open-ended questions to give her perspective of what went on. But her perspective is not the only perspective. Okay? It's not a missed opportunity or a negative thing because I just don't happen to agree with you. I'm the host. I'm not. What I do is present. That's what I do. That's my job. My job is to take interesting people and topics and events and things that you should know about and present them to you on the air. That's my job. My job is not to be a cheerleader or a basher of anyone. Now, I will absolutely wholeheartedly go after people who deserve it. Why not? Okay, yeah, I will. But did I go after Kelly here? No. Did I challenge her? Oh, yeah, you bet. Just like I would challenge anybody who comes on my show and makes a statement that I want to know more about. Doesn't matter who it is. Doesn't matter who it is. Please, those of you who listen to the show, and in fact, we just posted, Mike just posted the last Mara Kiesling show we had with Mara a few weeks ago. You know what? If you listen to the shows I've done with Mara Kiesling, you will hear me challenge her all the time. Doesn't matter. Doesn't mean I don't agree with her. It might mean I don't agree with her, but it doesn't necessarily mean I don't agree with her. It doesn't mean that we have issues. It doesn't mean that I'm discriminating against her. It means that I want to have a good discussion. And one of the things I love about hiring Mara on the show is that she's willing to get into it with me, and she's willing to go toe-to-toe with me, and I love that. It's one of the reasons why she is, A, one of our most popular guests, and B, one of my most frequent invites, because she's not only good, and she's not only super smart and knows her stuff as well as anyone, if probably better, but she's willing to debate it. She's willing to get into the details. She's willing to get into the weeds with me, okay? And you know what? And she understands that it's not an attack. It's not a confrontational thing. It's a discussion. That's the whole point. And you know what? Mike Rogers is sending me messages, and he is exactly right. He says, it's no fun. Wait a minute. Now I just lost the message. Ha ha. It's no fun if there isn't a back and forth. Might as well talk about the weather. And he's exactly right. He's exactly right. Okay? The whole point is to discuss and debate. That's what this show is about. And you know what? Guess what? I'm not always going to be on your side. I'm not always going to be on anyone's side. The only one side I'm going to be on every time is my own. Because, hello, welcome to the world. You know, and that's the thing. That's one of the reasons why we have a phone number. If I say something you think is wrong or needs to be challenged, you have that option. You can call me, 928-277-4921 right now. Call me out. That's why we have a phone number, because I want you to call me. I want you to get into it with me. I want you to discuss these and debate these issues. That's what this is about. That's what this is about. And frankly, it bothers me that Kelly is having this. It seems like it's like everything is about her. Everything is an attack against her. Everybody is ganging up on her. And you know what? No, that's not true. I'm sorry. It's just not. It's bullshit. It's not true. Everyone is not. You know, I mean, the center of attention is not Kelly Busey. The center of attention was the panel that was going on, or the panels. Okay? And you know what? Again, I want to make the point again, because it sounds like I'm not, but I want to make this point yet again. I am not questioning Kelly's perception of events. I am questioning her assignment of blame. And her assignment of motivation. That's what I am challenging. And that's what I find hard to understand. Sometimes shit happens because shit happens. Because you're running late and you got to cut somewhere. So, you know what? Sorry. Okay? And you know what? It's not always about being a victim. Sometimes it's just about being pressed for time. And I'm disappointed. I'm disappointed. You know, I wasn't going to get into another rant on this because we should do some news. But I'll say this one last thing. Don't be a victim, Kelly. Don't be a victim. Don't be a victim. Please. We have enough victims in this community. Be a leader. Be an activist. Be someone who speaks out. I know you're good at it. You can write as well as anybody in this community. Write about the right stuff. Don't assign blame where you don't know it belongs. Let's talk about solutions. Let's talk about what should we do next year to make sure that this sort of thing doesn't happen. That's what we should be talking about. All right. We're getting off this topic because I'm just getting real. I'm getting frustrated with this, and I want to. There's plenty of other new important news that happened this week that we should really get into. And the very minute that I find I find the right board, which I think I'm going to have to find. I'm just going to have to go to. Here we go. All right. Let's see. Okay. Okay. Well, actually, there was here's the thing. There was this one thing where RuPaul. And I thought I had a story on this, but I can't find it. It's okay. I can remember.
I couldn't
both
find one in your lovely email earlier, my dear.
Yeah, I don't know. I'll have to dig one up. But suffice it to say, RuPaul is shooting his mouth off yet again. And this time, you know, you wonder, is like, can RuPaul get any more idiotic and offensive? And then he does something like this. This is, oh, yes. Yes, he can.
Girl, you got Gmail.
Hey, dream girls.
Hi.
Now that you've had your spring awakening, it's time to strap on your kinky boots and form a chorus line. Oh, scruff pit crew! For today's mini challenge, I show you an extreme close-up of a famous celebrity. You tell me if she's a biological woman, or a psychological woman? It's time to play female
or shemale.
First up, Ben de la Creme.
Let's go.
Female or shemale?
Or ape. Let's go female.
That's female. Tan mom. She has a lot more to work on than her tan.
Is it a Sheila or a shemale?
Shemale.
Female. That's wrestler China.
I'm still not sure whether I got it right or wrong.
Yeah, me neither.
Oh, my goodness. Well, needless to say, you know, I swear, I said this on Facebook. I'll say it here. I think somebody should Pierce Morgan this asshole. I swear to God. I am just so fed up with this shit. Okay? Who the fuck does this idiot think he is? Okay? This rich gay male celebrity throwing around derogatory terms like tranny and shemale. What's next? You're going to call yourself a faggot? Stupid idiot. I mean, really, does this guy think, okay, this guy, because let's not forget, don't make the mistake of thinking this person is a woman. This person is not a woman. This person is barely trans. I mean, can you really call yourself a trans person when you yourself have been quoted as saying that the only reason you do drag is for money? Is it really an identity, or is it just a business for you, RuPaul? Because after all, what do you give a shit that trans people can't get jobs, that we get fired, that we get thrown out of our homes? What the fuck do you care? You got your shit covered, right? Your buddies all have your nice apple teenies, and you're hanging out at Human Rights Campaign galas, chugging them down with your rich buddies, right? You go hang out at your GLAAD galas and talk to your celebrity friends, right? And hey, GLAAD, you want to get yourself some credibility? How about you open your mouth on this one? How about you call out your celebrity buddy RuPaul for fucking bigotry, for using slurs on television? Isn't this what you people do? Where are you? Where are you, GLAAD? Or is this one of your celebrity buddies that you don't want to take on? Like Neil Patrick Harris, when you say remain silent on that one. He was more proactive than you were. I mean, come on. Okay, I think GLAAD should be leading the charge on this. And the fact that they're not says something not so nice about them. I hope that they take that to heart for whatever that's worth. Okay, because that's this is exactly the kind of thing that GLAAD should be speaking out against. These are slurs. They are offensive by any stretch and by any usage. And the fact that they happen to come from a gay male celebrity rather than Fred Phelps or some bigoted right-wing idiot should not matter. Not at all. And if you don't speak out on this, GLAAD, then what this will do is lend credence to the same accusations that everybody still makes about you guys, that all you care about is your rich celebrity friends and your galas, that you don't give a shit about the working class. Well, you know what? I know some of you folks, and I know that that's not true. But you know what? Having me say it here is one thing. Let's see you show everyone else. Let's see you clean up your own backyard. Now, today. Not in a week. Not when you see what the ratings are. Not when you see if RuPaul might be miffed. Not if you see it's going to hurt your gala donations. No. You do it because it's the right thing to do. End of story. Dead stop. Let's see if you do it. Okay? Well, let's see. Let's move on. Now, this was nice to see, but of course, as usual, yet another worthless effort for a party that's simply doing some early election year advertising for their candidates who couldn't care whether we live or die. Nearly 200 lawmakers call on Obama to sign into executive order. You know, the one that's been sitting on his desk for 5 fucking years. Yeah, that one. So this comes to us from, this is actually an AP article, I think. Yeah. Nearly 200 members of the House have signed a letter putting pressure, on President Obama, Barack Obama, to sign an executive order providing workplace protections. Yeah, because the first time worked so well, didn't it? The effort was organized by Senators Merkley, Baldwin, and Tom Harkin in the Senate, and by the LGBT Equality Caucus in the House. Well, I mean, that's nice to see. But, I mean, if the how come this so-called LGBT Equality Caucus in the House hasn't made a fucking peep on ENDA? Are you guys really that cowardly that you can't even speak up, that you can't even put pressure? Fuck Barack Obama. We need you to put pressure on Boehner to bring ENDA up for a vote. Where are you people? What, you want us to be impressed with this? Oh, we wrote a letter. You should vote for us because we signed a letter. Yeah, you know what? I'm sorry, but letters don't impress me. Letters are literally worth less than the paper they're printed on. President Obama has proven that by completely ignoring every other attempt. You know what'll matter? Legislation. Let's see you expend political capital to bring the bill up in the House. You were real quick to say that you were going to bring a discharge petition for immigration until, of course, Boehner shut that one down. Where's your discharge petition for ENDA? Don't come to us and say how big, you should think we're wonderful and great supporters because we signed on to totally non-controversial letter. I mean, who do you people think you're kidding? Seriously. Who do you people think you're kidding? Now, I mean, I have to tell you, I've met Senator Merkley. I think he's a good guy. I think he's honestly held. And look at the effort that he put together, along with many others, put together to get ENDA passed through the Senate. He did a great job, and I am not in any way denigrating the work that he and Senator Harkin and all the other folks in the Senate did to get that result. That was a great thing. It was progress. But then look at what happened once that bill was passed in the Senate. Nothing. Silence. It was as if in the House it never happened. All they were talking about was immigration. It was as if it never happened. And now they're coming to us and saying, oh, you should vote for us now because look, we signed a letter. Big fucking deal. Big fucking deal. Why do I care? You signed another letter. Oh, gee, how courageous of you. Gosh, we're so impressed. I mean, really, do you think we're that stupid? I mean, we watch television. We have internet connections. I mean, how stupid do you people think we are? The 90s are over, goddammit. The Clinton era is done. It wasn't that great to begin with. There was more damage done during the Clinton era to LGBT rights than there was during 8 years of George Bush. So please don't laud that to us. Okay? Where has LGBT working families' rights gone under President Obama? Nowhere. Zippo. What did we get? Oh, we got hate crimes. Oh, gee. Oh, we got don't ask, don't tell. Transgender exclusive, of course. I mean, and then they want us to say, oh, isn't that great? Isn't that wonderful? Oh, you did such a wonderful thing by signing a fucking letter. Sorry, I'm not impressed. What will impress me is results. I think 40 years is long enough to wait for basic civil rights, don't you? It is time to say, no, not good enough. This is bullshit. We are not going to allow you to use the Employment Non-Discrimination Act again as a carrot to draw donations and votes, but refuse to actually make an effort to make this law, because that's what they're doing. This is all an exercise in Democratic Party self-promotion. Look at all the things we're doing. Look at all the things we're doing. Don't look over there at the House where they're ignoring you completely. Look over here in the Senate where we're putting on a big show for you. Don't pay attention over there. Don't pay attention to the fact that this should have happened 5 years ago when it actually could have become law. Don't pay attention to any of that stuff. No, no, no. Here, watch the big show that we're putting on over here in the Senate. You know, watch us sign letters to beg President Obama to take the pressure from where it rightly belongs on cowardly Democrats in the House who refuse to stand up for justice. You know what? I think President Obama has made it quite clear. He's not going to bail you out of this one because he doesn't give a shit whether we live or die. Okay? I think it's been quite clear. I mean, how else can you see this? I mean, we're not talking about a few months here. We're talking 5 years. He could have done this in his first year in office. Could have done it in his second year in office. Now I'm talking about the executive order. Okay? He could have done ENDA if the president had come out for ENDA, like he promised he would. In 2009, and had gotten it passed through the Senate, gotten it passed through the House, which were both democratically controlled at the time. If that had happened, we'd be celebrating ENDA's passage now. But no. Apparently 40 years is not long enough for us to wait. Not when there's money to be made by the gay marriage, groups. There's a reason why people have such a low opinion of Congress. And behavior like this is exactly what it is. They talk a good game, but they fold in the clutch every single time. Why are we going to support that? I'll tell you what I think. I think it's time. I've said this before. I'll say it again. It's time for the start of a progressive party, a real progressive, not Democrats. These Democrats are not really progressives. At least most of them are not. Yeah, there are some real progressives who are members of the Democratic Party, but most of these people don't give a shit about real progressive values. What they care about is money and re-election. They care about money and they care about votes, and that's about it. I think it's time for a real progressive party. I think it's time for us to do the progressive version of the Tea Party and start lopping heads, start primarying people, start saying, you know what, Nancy Pelosi, you're not going to fight for us. You know what? We're going to do everything we can to replace you. And you know what? Here's the thing. You may be so strong that we may not be able to take you down by ourselves and replace you with one of our candidates, but we might be able to make the difference between your reelection and not reelection. And if you have to suffer a Republican in that office for a couple of years, well, then, you know, it's not like anything's getting better with you in office and leading the Democrats in the House. So, what's the difference? Another 2 years? If it gets you out and replaces you with somebody who's more concerned about constituents rather than the party, I'm okay with that. How about we start lopping heads? How about we start primarying people? I think that's what we need to do. Look at how much progress the Tea Party has made. They basically control the Republican Party now. I think that's what we have to do. Because left to their own devices, Democrats cannot be trusted. It's just, it's what it is. I mean, I don't like to say that. I wish I didn't have to say that. But I don't see any other option because it doesn't appear the Democrats in the House are going to do a goddamn thing for us. They're still running scared. They're still cowards. They're still afraid of their own shadows. They're still living in the 1990s, refusing to stand up for justice. They talk a good game, but they fold in the clutch every single time. And it's time for people to elect leaders who put people first, who put the working class first, not their corporate sponsors, and not when it's convenient for President Obama, and not when it's convenient for Nancy Pelosi, and not when it's convenient for Harry Reid, and not when it's time for them to ask for more money and votes for you every couple of years like they do. You want us to think of you as leaders, Democrats? How about you start acting like leaders? Because I'll tell you, I don't see anything changing unless one of two things happens. A, the leadership of the House Democrats, it's booted out. B, the people who are getting in the way need to be replaced. I mean, I think that's the only way. It's the only way. They have shown us that left to their own devices, when you trust Democrats to get the job done, they will fail you. Because failure is what's politically convenient for the president and his supplicants in Congress. Okay? The Senate put on a show for us, and then the House just pulled the curtain. Okay, on to the next topic. We're done with them. We've put on our show for the LGBTs. Now let's go after the ones with the more money and votes. Let's focus on the people who, you know, could actually change the course of elections. I mean, that's really what it's about. All right, I have blathered on enough tonight. I thought we had a pretty good show. It is time for us to wrap this sucker up. I want to say thank you to everybody for listening, for tuning in. We blew up the servers tonight, God knows. I hope you were all able to listen. If you couldn't, we will be getting the podcast up as quickly as possible, so stick around for that. I'll post something on Facebook as soon as it's up. I want to also let you know, 3 minutes from now, we will be repeating the entire show. So if you missed it, you can tune in, listen to the whole thing beginning to end. And we will catch you next week. Have a good night, everybody.
Show the people!